You're tuned to Truth News Radio Australia, coming to you on the 14th of August, 2013. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It's great to have you aboard the Ship of Truth as we plough through some very, very stormy and choppy waters tonight. There's a lot going on in the world. Quite a few things I want to run through in today's show. And I do have a guest lined up who was due to join us in the second hour, but unfortunately she has cancelled at the last minute. But I do not blame her. She's under a lot of pressure, and she had another more important interview offer came up. I do hope to get her on next week. Very important guest. I'll leave it a bit of a mystery for now. But I do hope that you join us next week, because my guest will be running through some important information about geopolitics, 9/11, the Iraq War, whistleblowers, and various things from a perspective of someone who knows quite a bit about what's going on. So I'll just leave it at that, and do join us next week for that exclusive interview with on Truth News Radio. Now, in today's show, I would like to start with a look at the Egypt situation. This is currently saturating the news. I've been watching the BBC World Service, and for about the last hour, it's been continuous coverage of Egypt and nothing else. And of course, that's because a state of emergency has been declared in Egypt, and there have been reports of the security forces there firing on protesters in the streets. We're seeing another one of these scenarios being played out that we've seen again and again over the past few years, and a lot of it actually started in Egypt with the Arab Spring. And, you know, when I see this happening, and I don't quite understand what's going on, I really struggle to try and figure it out, because I've certainly gleaned a lot of knowledge about what the underlying agendas were in, say, Libya or Syria. I've never quite had a handle on what is going on in Egypt. It seems very confusing and confused. And today I decided I would try and probe into this a little, and I put in a few search terms into Google. It may seem a little naive, but I actually put, you know, the truth about Egypt into Google, and I also put phrases such as American involvement in overthrow of Morsi, the leader who was overthrown about a month ago. I put that into Google, and guess what? I came up with some interesting stuff. I'd had a sneaking suspicion that the US was somehow involved in what is going on in a very deep way, not just in a tangential way, but that the policymakers in the US, organizations like the National Endowment for Democracy, which has a sordid history of infiltrating countries and is obviously a CIA front, that these types of organizations had been involved. But when you looked at what's going on in Egypt, you just can't figure it out, you know, because on the one hand, the leader who was ousted was part of an Islamist movement, the Muslim Brotherhood, and you'd say, well, okay, so why was that overthrown, and now we see efforts from the around the world, from Western countries, to try and alleviate the situation, to try and bring diplomatic pressure on the current government in Egypt to show restraint and to allow the protests to continue. And you're thinking, well, you know, okay, this sounds like they're framing the current situation in Egypt. It looks a little bit like Syria, doesn't it, where you've got security forces in Syria firing on the people on the street. Although it's a little different in Syria, because in Syria you've got a ragtag collection of Islamist elements opposing a government which is more centrist, and is, although Islamic in its fundamentals, very very tolerant with religions and cultures, that that's been the signature of the Assad regime going back many decades. And indeed, Syria has a very large Christian population. Now, in Egypt, what we see is we had an elected government which was Islamist, but which was somewhat moderate Islamist and actually had the support of the people. But we see that that was overthrown in what appears to have been quite a violent manner, in fact, a military coup. And we now have the ousted leader under house arrest and his followers on the streets protesting, and people are firing on them. And you've got to think, well, why would the Americans want a scenario like that? Because there had been whispers that this was the case, that somehow that this was part of American foreign policy. Well, I've got a theory about all of that. But I want to first bring to you an article which was published on Al Jazeera just about a month ago, shortly after the coup in Egypt. And the title of that article is U.S. Bankrolled Anti-Morsi Activists. Documents reveal a U.S. money trail to Egyptian groups that pressed for the president's removal. President Barack Obama recently stated the U.S. Was not taking sides as Egypt's crisis came to a head with the military overthrow of the democratically elected president. But a review of dozens of U.S. federal government documents shows Washington has quietly funded senior Egyptian opposition figures who called for toppling of the country's now deposed president, Mohamed Morsi. Documents obtained by the investigative reporting program at UC Berkeley show the U.S. channeled funding through a State Department program to promote democracy in the Middle East region. This program vigorously supported activists and politicians who have fomented unrest in Egypt after autocratic President Hosni Mubarak was ousted in a popular uprising in February 2011. The State Department's program, dubbed by US officials as a Democracy Assistance Initiative, is part of a wider Obama administration effort to try to stop the retreat of pro-Washington secularists and to win back influence in Arab Spring countries that saw the rise of Islamists who largely oppose US interests in the Middle East. Now, I'll just put some commentary on that. What I actually believe is going on is not so much, it's not as simple as that, and it's not as rational as that, because actually the players at work here, the agendas at work, are somewhat psychopathic. And I use that term advisedly. I do believe that the people who are shaping policy that come from these shadowy organizations like the CIA have at their core agencies, individuals who are mentally deranged, unhinged, who have been sort of let loose to create chaos. And we have to understand that with the order out of chaos meme, with the Hegelian dialectic, as it's often described, is that quite often the agenda is simply to create chaos, is simply to create warring factions. And quite often the way that is actually controlled is a little bit, you know, a little bit on the edges of it, a little bit out of control. Although they're pushing it in one general direction, it's still a little bit out of control. And we've seen that again and again throughout history. Think of the rise of Hitler and the fascist Europe in the 1930s. We know that was supported by large banks and by people within foreign policies of major Western nations, because they wanted to have this bulwark against the Russian Revolution. and they wanted to create a great conflagration. The exact manner in which that unfolded, they couldn't control. They couldn't control the details. All they could do is set things in motion. And I believe that's what they've been doing in the Middle East, is setting things in motion, creating unrest, and funding different sides in conflicts to basically create carnage, chaos, and evil. I mean, we're talking about pure evil here. We're talking about people who want to see the world descend into anomie, into sheer hell, essentially. But let me just continue here from the article from Al Jazeera. It says here, activists bankrolled by the program, this is the US program in Egypt, activists bankrolled by the program include an exiled Egyptian police officer who plotted the violent overthrow of the Morsi government, an anti-Islamist politician who advocated closing mosques and dragging preachers out by force, as well as a coterie of opposition politicians who pushed for the ouster of the country's first democratically elected leader, as government documents show. Information obtained under the Freedom of Information Act reveals Washington's democracy assistance may have violated Egyptian law, which prohibits foreign political funding. It may also have broken US government regulations that ban the use of taxpayers' money to fund foreign politicians. Washington's Democracy Assistance Program for the Middle East is filtered through a pyramid of agencies within the State Department. Hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars is channeled through the Bureau for Democracy, Human Rights and Labor. The Middle East Partnership Initiative, USAID, as well as the Washington-based quasi-governmental organization, the National Endowment for Democracy. In turn, those groups reroute money to other organizations, such as the International Republican Institute, the National Democratic Institute, and Freedom House, among others. Now, just skipping through here, a main conduit for channeling the State Department's democracy funds to Egypt has been the National Endowment for Democracy. Federal documents show NED, which in 2011 was authorized an annual budget of $118 million by Congress, funneled at least $120,000 over several years to an exiled Egyptian police officer who has for years incited violence in his native country. This appears to be in direct contradiction to its congressional mandate, which clearly states that NED is to engage only in peaceful political change overseas. And when we come back from the break, I'm going to continue with this, because the things that this exiled policeman has been funded for, or in relation to, are just quite incredible. I mean, we're talking about the US money, government giving money to psychopathic violence. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back after this break. Don't go away.
Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
With Truth News Radio. It's great to be with you today. And I'm going through some research here that I've done into the current situation in Egypt. And I've come up with a very interesting article which was published on Al Jazeera, which is not generally a really great news source. I've very rarely referred to it. It generally seems to be just a mouthpiece for US foreign policy. But like any news organization, you know, occasionally something real does sneak through. I think that despite the attempt by those who would be the controllers of our media, despite their attempts to filter everything that gets through, you do find in any news organization the occasional bit of research which is genuine getting through, the occasional truly investigative reporting being done. But generally, you've got to probe for it. You've got to search for it. And that's what I had to do to uncover this story. I had to run a number of searches in Google before I started finding these stories, which certainly had not been prominent before. And now this particular story, which was published in early July, is titled U.S. Bankrolled Anti-Morsi Activists. And it details a number of quite shocking examples of the way in which money from U.S. Sources has gone into supporting quite outrageous individuals, such as the exiled policeman, Colonel Omar Afafi Soliman. It says here that he served in Egypt's elite investigative police unit, which was notorious for human rights abuses, and began receiving the NED funds, that's National Endowment for Democracy funds, in 2008, which continued for at least 4 years. During that time, he and his followers targeted Mubarak's government and then later followed the same tactics against the military rulers who briefly replaced Mubarak. Most recently, Soliman set his sights on Morsi's government. Soliman has refugee status in the US, but was sentenced in absentia last year for 5 years imprisonment by a Cairo court for his role in inciting violence in 2011 against the embassies of Israel and Saudi Arabia. I mean, this guy seems like a classic agent provocateur, the sort of person that is used to basically ignite conflicts, to spark problems, to pour a bit of fuel on existing problems. This is the technique of the great game, as we've seen it played out decade after decade, generation after generation, around the world, but with particular intensity in the Middle East, and of course, which was done by the British Empire going back hundreds of years as part of their divide and rule strategies. Now, it says here that this chap, Soliman, used social media to encourage violent attacks against Egyptian officials, according to court documents. U.S. Internal Revenue Service documents reveal that NED paid tens of thousands of dollars to Soliman through an organization he created called the People's Rights, which was based in Falls Church, Virginia. Federal records show that he is the only employee of that group. After he was awarded a 2008 Human Rights Fellowship at NED and moved to the US, Soliman received a second $50,000 NED grant in 2009. In 2010, he received a $60,000 and another $10,000 grant in 2011. In an interview with the investigative reporting program at UC Berkeley, Soliman reluctantly admitted he received US government funding, but complained it wasn't enough. NED has now removed public access to its Egyptian grant recipients in 2011 and 2012 from its website. NED officials did not respond to repeated interview requests. NED's website says Soliman spreads only a non-violent literature and his group was set up to provide immediate pro bono legal advice through a telephone hotline, instant messaging, and other social networking tools. However, in Egyptian media interviews, social media posts, and YouTube videos, Soliman encouraged the violent overthrow of Egypt's government, then led by the Muslim Brotherhood's Freedom and Justice Party. That, of course, is the Morsi regime, which was overthrown just last month. And here's some direct quotes from Mr. Soliman. "Incapacitate them by smashing their knee bones first," he instructed followers on Facebook in late June, as Morsi's opponents prepared massive street rallies against the government. Egypt's US-funded and trained military later used those demonstrations to justify its coup on July 3. "Make a road bump with a broken palm tree to stop the buses going into Cairo and drench the road around it with gas and diesel. When the bus slows down for the bump, set it all ablaze so it will burn down with all the passengers inside. God bless." I mean, this guy is a lunatic, wacko, psychopath, right? Just the sort of guy that, our CIA boys back in Virginia love to have on the ground there, in the field, as they say, you know, when they're trying to basically topple a regime or trying to just engineer something. They need a crazed wacko like that, basically inciting violence. I mean, this is coming from America. This is being funded from sources deep within the US government. In late May, Soliman instructed, again via social media, "Behead those who control power, water and gas utilities." Soliman removed several older social media posts after authorities in Egypt took notice of his subversive instructions. More recent Facebook instructions to his 83,000 followers range from guidelines on spraying roads with a mixture of oil and gas to how to thwart cars giving chase. On a YouTube video, Soliman took credit for a failed attempt in December to storm the Egyptian presidential palace with handguns and Molotov cocktails to oust Morsi. So I won't continue with that article, but let's just ponder this, right? So we've got organizations deep within the US foreign policy supporting people like him. And, okay, there may have been some discontent in Egypt. There may have been some aspects which legitimately were not right about Morsi. But what they've done, right, is to just adopt the worst practices, to basically support the worst practices. These are essentially terrorist practices. Basically what they've done is funded terrorism against the elected regime in Egypt. And, you know, doesn't that sound like a familiar story? It's the same pattern. It's what we saw in Libya. It's what we see in Syria. It's what we saw in Iran going back decades and decades. It's what we saw in the Vietnam War. And, you know, there's always one side or the other in this that you're trying to figure out, well, do they support this or do they support that? Do they support the secularists or do they support the Muslim? And we're trying to sort of rationalize what they're doing because we think, you know, it can't just be sheer madness, or can it? And this is the question that I want to pose to you, is that perhaps it is sheer madness. I'm talking about moral insanity here, and this is a term that's often used to describe the condition of psychopathy. It's not technical insanity. It's not like hearing voices and running around naked doing bizarre things. It's organized and it's capable of carrying out very very carefully planned agendas, and it's capable, the people in this kind of state of mind are capable of deceiving with the intent to achieve an agenda. And I'll get more into that when we come back from the break. I do hope you stay with us with Truth News Radio. We'll be right back. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. I hope you're enjoying our audio stings here today. I've had to change some of our music because I've been having a bit of trouble with copyright violations coming up in YouTube when people try to post my shows on YouTube, and I'm basically forced now to revert to copyright-free bumpers and themes. But I could do a whole show on the ludicrous nature of the way Google has partnered with its buddies in Sony Music and you know, the big record labels to basically try to police copyright. Of course, they're making money out of it at the same time because they charge a fee for this little bot that runs around trying to identify copyrighted segments of music. And, you know, even the tiniest sting will be identified by these bots. And, you know, you get three strikes and then your account's gone. And, of course, when they delete your account, they delete everything in it. It's pretty severe. But that's a story I'd like to actually get into in more depth. I want to continue now looking at the Egypt situation. And I want to turn to an article that was actually published in Australia's Sydney Morning Herald by the chief foreign correspondent, Paul McGough. The article is titled, "Al-Qaeda Ready to Seize Its Chance." Just to summarise here, basically what we're seeing with the current descent into anarchy and anomy and hell in Egypt is, guess what? Our old friends, Al-Qaeda, are stepping forward as the kind of inheritors of that situation. And, you know, it's the same pattern again and again in country after country. And of course, you know, Al-Qaeda is always the beneficiary of collapsed states. And America just stands by and says, well, gee, you know, we're very unhappy about this situation. And we, you know, it's really very, very bad. And yet everything they do creates this situation. And it's very deliberate. As we saw there in the last segment, with organisations like the National Endowment for Democracy, they are creating this scenario. And, you know, I think that they're morally insane. I think the people are doing it. We shouldn't give them too much credit. They're simply degenerates. You know, the people who are running the show, who are setting these policies in motion, need to be seized, locked up and put in a very, very safe place where they can't harm other people. And they need to be studied, folks. They're sick. There's a whole level within government around the world of very, very sick people. And this show, what we're doing is we're trying to work against that. We're trying to highlight that. And every now and then we get a little bit of help from the mainstream media. Yeah, it's few and far between, but again, we have an article here from the Sydney Morning Herald by Paul McGough, a man who I've criticised on this show because he's done, you know, hideous propaganda pieces in support of Israel and completely ignored the reality of the situation in Syria. But every now and then, you know, he comes up with a nice little corker, you know, something that basically says it like it is. And the title of this article says it all, "Al-Qaeda Ready to Seize Its Chance." And I'll just read to you here from the article directly. "Maybe it's not finished, but the Arab Spring is certainly on its knees. Again and again, we are told that Egypt is the region's big enchilada, supposedly setting the pace for change. But if that's the case, who is the Arab Spring's winner? Al-Qaeda, take a bow. Uprisings across the region since 2011 were a genuine grassroots revolt against corrosive corruption and an established order of dictators and kleptocrats. The enemies of the people were being taken down, but by people power, not by terrorism. And it was inevitable that Islamist partiers would dominate a new order in the Muslim world, initially at least. Al-Qaeda was completely wrong-footed. Its decades of bombing and terrorism had come to nothing. Its pleas for armed resistance were being ignored. And even as it warned that democracy is a scam and a Western trick, the people embraced it. Now, after the coup in Egypt, Al-Qaeda is saying, "We told you so." And many people in Egypt and beyond will perhaps agree and feel that they have been deceived. The risk the West faces is that so many Islamists who have good reason to feel they were robbed by Mohamed Morsi's ousting will be ripe for the picking by Al-Qaeda. Syria is the new Afghanistan when it comes to jihad training, with an estimated 6,000 Al-Qaeda followers and other hardcore groups fighting among the rebels. And if they go the same way as Abdel Fattah al-Sisi in Cairo, leaders in Tunis and Tripoli will be called on to justify a resort to armed resistance. Now the revolutions have all but failed, creating more chaos than constitutions, and Twitter is not mobilizing reform, terrorism expert Bruce Rydell writes. The pandemonium in Syria, Libya, and Egypt is like a hothouse for Al-Qaeda, which is thriving just as it has in Afghanistan and Somalia. The coup in Egypt and the chaotic aftermath of the Arab Awakening is only going to convert more people to jihad and add more militants to this army of radicals. After 15 years, there's no end in sight to Al-Qaeda. How many more killings will it take in Cairo to set Egypt on the same course as 1990s Algeria, when Islamists who were thwarted by the generals went underground and after 9 months unleashed a civil war which killed about 100,000 over a decade? Now, really quite an interesting piece there by Paul McGough. And of course, it merely says what we in the alternative media have known all along, is that Al-Qaeda is being crystallized out of these situations. And Al-Qaeda only really thrives in broken states, in situations where a very long period of war and violence and social disorder has been in place. Because I put it to you that Al-Qaeda is actually a collection of extreme nutters too. And I think some of them might be actually literally insane, rather than sort of merely morally insane, as are their handlers in the CIA. And, you know, we saw it decades ago in Lebanon, when, of course, Lebanon was torn apart by conflict after Israel invaded Lebanon in the 1980s. And we saw these, you know, Lebanon had been... the fabric of society had been torn up there, and we saw more and more of these extremists there, and they got into abducting foreigners, and we had all these cases of Westerners being held there for years and years, and just horrendous human rights atrocities. Of course, we had Israel committing human rights atrocities there as well, and of course we saw it and still see it in Afghanistan, which, you know, since the late 1970s has just been a battleground and facilitated the rising of the Taliban and a whole ragtag group of people who are simply the product of failed societies, people who are the product of war and violence. Egypt is not in that category yet. But we've seen, you know, year after year now, going back, you know, 4 or 5 years, that Egypt has really been destabilized. And we see this with other countries in that region. And each time this happens, for example, in Libya now, Libya is completely taken over by these elements. They killed the U.S. ambassador there last year, and as I was talking about on the last show, that was just met with, you know, almost a sort of a shrug of the shoulders, and you know, oh well, it's too bad, but we're still, you know, we support democracy in Libya, and we're really trying to doing our best to resolve this with diplomacy. And this is what they're going to be saying in Egypt, that we're doing our best to try and bring things back together, when in fact the truth is the exact opposite. They're doing their best to sow unrest, to create chaos, to create evil. I wish it were not the case. And of course, you're going to see on the BBC, on CNN, you're going to see this hand-wringing. Oh, what can we do about it? Complete reverse of reality. We're going to break. We'll be back for one more segment. Do stay with us. With Truth News Radio. Moving ahead with some other news now, I want to play you a clip from Democracy Now! Of Amy Goodman speaking to Glenn Greenwald, of course the man who brought us the Edward Snowden revelations. And the subject here is the terror alert, which was being hyped up in the news in the last couple of weeks and led to the closure of diplomatic posts around the Middle East and North Africa. And it's quite an insightful little discussion here. And again, it's an example of mainstream media. And I do consider Democracy Now! To be mainstream. I know it's somewhat on the fringe of mainstream, but it's still pretty mainstream. And Glenn Greenwald, of course, is Guardian. So he's right, you know, in the mainstream. But, you know, it's extraordinary and I think fascinating when we see the media actually doing its job. You know, I think, wow, what an amazing world we could have if this were regular, if this were normal. And we need to encourage it. We need to say when we see it, we need to give it the thumbs up. So that's why I like to actually play these clips on this show. And it also gives me a chance to shut up for a while someone else talks, because doing a show like this on my own, I don't like to be constantly talking, and I don't always have guests on, unfortunately. So, enough from me. Let's continue now, and I'll play you the clip here of Amy Goodman talking with Glenn Greenwald.
I want to go back to Senator Saxby Chambliss, the top Republican in the Senate Intelligence Committee, to get Glenn Greenwald's response. During an appearance on NBC's Meet the Press, he said the NSA surveillance programs had uncovered information about the threats that prompted the U.S. to close 19 embassies in North Africa and Middle East.
These programs are controversial. We understand that. They're very sensitive, but they're also very important because they are what lead us to have the, or allow us to have the ability to gather this chatter that I referred to. If we did not have these programs, then we simply wouldn't be able to listen in on the bad guys. And I will say that it's the 702 program that has allowed us to pick up on this chatter. That's the program that allows us to listen overseas, not on domestic soil, but overseas.
That was Senator Chambliss. Glenn Greenwald, your response.
You know, it's so ludicrous. For 8 straight years, literally, Democrats, every time there was a terrorist alert or a terrorist advisory issued by the United States government in the middle of a debate over one of the Bush-Cheney civil liberties abuses, would accuse the United States government and the national security state of exaggerating terrorism threats, of manipulating advisories, of hyping the dangers of al-Qaeda in order to distract attention away from their abuses and to scare the population into submitting to whatever it is they wanted to do. And so here we are in the midst of, you know, one of the most intense debates and sustained debates that we've had in a very long time in this country over the dangers of excess surveillance. And suddenly, an administration that has spent 2 years claiming that it has decimated al-Qaeda decides that there is this massive threat that involves the closing of embassies and consulates throughout the world. And within literally a matter of hours, the likes of Saxby Chambliss and Lindsey Graham join with the White House and Democrats in Congress, who remember are the leading defenders of the NSA at this point, to exploit that terrorist threat and to insist that it shows that the NSA and these programs are necessary. What that has to do with the ongoing controversy about the NSA is completely mystifying. Nobody has ever questioned or disputed that the U.S. government, like all governments around the world, ought to be eavesdropping and monitoring the conversations of people who pose an actual threat to the United States in terms of plotting terrorist attacks. The controversy is over the fact that they are sweeping up billions and billions of emails and telephone calls every single day from people around the world and in the United States who have absolutely nothing to do with terrorism. And if anything, the only thing that that controversy, the warning has to do with the current controversy is that the argument that a lot of analysts have made very persuasively is that when you have an agency that collects everything, it actually becomes harder, not easier, to detect actual terrorist plots and to find the actual terrorists. And if this agency really were devoted, if these surveillance programs were really devoted to finding terrorism, they would be much more directed and discriminating, but they're not. They're indiscriminate and limitless, and that's one of the problems.
Glenn Greenwald, you appeared on ABC's This Week on Sunday. After speaking with you, the host, Martha Raddatz, asked House Intelligence Committee member, Democratic Representative Dutch Ruppersberger, to respond to your claim that members of Congress have had difficulty getting details of NSA programs. Let's go to his response.
Since this incident occurred with Snowden, we've had three different hearings for members of our Democratic caucus and of the Republican caucus, where General Alexander has come with his deputy, Chris English, to ask any questions that people have as it relates to this information. And we will continue to do that, because what we're trying to do now is to get the American public to know more about what's going on, that NSA is following the law, and that we have checks and balances. We have the courts. We have both the Senate and House Intelligence Committee. We have Justice Department. We have checks and balances here to make sure that NSA does not violate the law in what they're doing. And you know, since these two programs have come into effect, especially the metadata, there's not been one incident of any member of the NSA breaking any law whatsoever. But we can do better. I have to educate my caucus more, the Democratic caucus, and we're trying to declassify as much as we can.
That's Democratic Congressmember Dutch Ruppersberger. Glenn Greenwald, your response.
I hope Dutch Ruppersberger takes a much more prominent role in the political debate, because he's basically the embodiment of the rotted soul that has become the Democratic Party. Not only does his district encompass Fort Meade, which is the headquarters of the NSA, which explains in part why he is this stalwart, steadfast NSA loyalist, but he is almost drowning in cash from the defense and intelligence industries. He's the second leading recipient in the entire United States House of Representatives of money from those industries. And he then gets placed on the very committee that the Church Committee created in the mid-1970s to exercise oversight over the agency and the community that basically ensures that his coffers are stuffed full of cash. So, of course, he becomes the leading spokesperson for that agency and then goes around defending it and saying they've done nothing wrong and they're vital and indispensable to our national security. That's the leading Democrat on that committee. But the thing that he was asked was about, in terms of members of Congress being blocked from information, basic information, isn't my claim. Members of Congress came to me with this grievance and asked me to write about it. And they gave me correspondence between themselves and the Intelligence Committee. And what they were asking for was not very sensitive information. They were asking for the most basic things, things they read about in media accounts, such as the ruling by the FISA court in 2011 that much of what the NSA has been doing, spying on Americans domestically, is a violation of the Constitution and the law. There really is, Amy, an 85-page, 86-page ruling issued by the FISA court that says the government has been systematically breaking the law and violating the Fourth Amendment and how it spies on us. And not only can we not see that ruling because it remains a secret at the insistence of of the Obama administration, even our elected representatives in Congress who were told are exercising robust oversight are blocked from seeing it. And that's the correspondence that we published that was given to me by various House members. So yeah, they do get meetings with General Alexander where they get to raise their hand and ask questions. And General Alexander says, we're not violating the law, and we are strictly adhering to what our guidelines are. He can say whatever he wants. They want to get the actual documents. That's how you exercise oversight. And they're being denied it about the most basic information about both the NSA and the FISA court.
I'll just leave it there. I think Glenn Greenwald is just like a machine. He's just incredible. He's demolishing lies at an incredible rate there. And it's great to see this level of incisiveness coming onto Democracy Now! And, you know, I only wish that Democracy Now! Would continue with that style and actually start to look at some of the things that they've continually strayed away from and hidden from, such as questions about what really happened on 9/11. And, you know, there is so much that Amy Goodman has turned her gaze away from, and so many, I guess, cliches that she has embraced, such as the global warming scare, such as the true nature of the situation in Syria, and many, many aspects of U.S. foreign policy. But in some cases, her show has actually done some really great work. I just wish it wasn't so patchy, you know, and I wish I could understand more about why that is the case. But all I can say is that, you know, here we see real questions being asked, and we see the government lies just falling apart. And let's hope that continues. Now, I'd like to just turn to some Australian news. An interesting article here on the Climate Skeptics Party's blog in relation to Agenda 21. And, of course, the Climate Skeptics Party is a registered political party in Australia, and they will be having candidates in the upcoming election. And I've actually had the leader of that party on this show twice, and he's a great guy. And they've got a very good, solid policy agenda, this organisation. But I've got a story here which I'm just briefly going to refer to you before we finish up for today. It says here that John Smead, along with Case Smith, who brought Christopher Monckton to Australia, has reported that they have had a win against the insidious Agenda 21 with the Queensland State Liberal National Party, who passed a resolution opposing Agenda 21, and that resolution is now becoming LNP policy. So that's a nice little positive thing. Again, another little beam of sunshine in our very, very murky world. It says here that well, here is the submission here to the Liberal National Party. We are presenting this very simple resolution because we consider it to be extremely important in the context of protecting the well-being of Australian society. Many interested people consider Agenda 21 to be nothing other than a harmless, non-binding United Nations document. Sorry, I'm having trouble speaking today. However, Agenda 21 is anything but that. And in reality, it is an insidious and carefully structured and worded piece of social engineering, setting out how the UN considers the world should live in the 21st century. Now, I'll have to leave it at that. I will be posting this on the website. Do check it out. That's us for this week. Unfortunately, there will be no Hour 2 today, but we'll be back next week with a very important interview, so do join us then. Over and out from Truth News Radio.